Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Father's Day to all. Jim Gaffigan, in his act, says that he thinks that Father's Day was created because they did Mother's Day for a couple of years, and then they all said, "Yeah, I guess we got to do something for the old guy."
He's not far wrong.
Gotta salute your dad, also, right?
We'll be talking about that at the far-flung forecast.
We're going to be about the origins of Father's Day. Okay.
And he's actually not all that far off.
only to be followed up by talking with Schwani's dad.
Yep.
Mr. Schwani Sr.
Schwani Sr.
Paul Schwan. 97 years old.
97 years old.
Holy
yep.
Smokes.
Yep. And we will be celebrating later this afternoon.
Puts us all to shame. He puts us all to shame with energy, intuitiveness, curiosity. He's an amazing guy.
Yeah, he certainly
is. He's an amazing guy. And, you're lucky you have a great dad.
And he's, he just keeps going and going and going. Yeah. Like to use the old cliche now, and it is rather old, the Energizer Bunny, yeah. But that's true.
Despite the amount of stress you must have put on him growing up.
I have been apologizing that now that I'm in my older years, what did I put my parents through?
Imagine what a young Schwani must have been like as a kid.
Oh, yes. I heard the phrase, wait till your father gets home.
Oh, really?
Quite often.
Oh, yes. Really? But I see your dad like Andy Griffith, though, kind of sitting down, talking to you.
He did. He did.
Son, I just want to tell you about that I'm disappointed in what you did. Burning down the garage is not good. Did he do that? Was that his go-to thing where he'd sit down and have a talk with you first?
We would do that, but it was in a very rather firm tone of voice, not yelling, but you knew he meant business.
He
had a very serious look on his face, and that would be, yes, you better pay attention. So
now, see, my dad, when you did something right, I would also get the wait until your dad comes home.
You got that, too.
I would get that. But then when dad did come home, it was more reaching for the belt region.
Oh, okay, he didn't even say anything. He just
often
went for.
there weren't too many Andy Griffiths one-on-one talks. It was mostly reach for the belt and then just go hide.
Well, you know, there was a time or two when Andy got a little more perturbed than usual with Opie and was very stern about it, and Opie would just look up and say, "But Pow, I didn't do it. Honest, Pow."
There really is a man in the tree.
There really is a man in the tree, Mr. McBeavy.
I always admired Andy Griffith as a dad.
Oh, one of the best.
He's like one of the great TV
dads
of all time.
Of all time, yes.
I mean, my dad was fine also, but
I have to say, this has been...
My dad wasn't sheriff of Mayberry.
No, but I must tell you, I remember the story. This goes back a number of years, and you told this story on the air about how you and your brothers put mud on your father's car.
We washed his brand-new car with mud.
A brand-new car with mud.
Brand-new.
That went over real well.
Yeah, it was one of those Chevys. I don't remember the year. Probably early 60s. Brand new Chevy with huge fins.
Those old
cars had, they looked like airplanes.
Yeah.
This was my dad's pride and joy, this car. And I think it may have been the first new car that we had ever in the family also. So my brother and I thought, we're going to wash dad's car with mud.
You didn't do this on Father's Day, did you?
I don't think
so. Okay.
I don't think so. Dad was not happy about it.
No. No.
That may have been one of those belt days.
It may have been that.
We had quite a few belt days.
And you spent just as much time washing off the mud as you did putting it back on.
Can I tell you how much I wish that my dad had worn suspenders? And not had a belt so close. My dad believed in the power of the belt. And I still turned out this way anyway.
Oh. Well, that was...
No, actually, you know
what? No comment there.
I shouldn't say that because I'm painting like a horrible picture of him. He was maybe one of the kindest people in the world. Maybe to a fault. He was so nice to everybody. But if you... You know, there were four boys in our family, so tempers were often. There was almost always something wrong going on. so he worked. It was a lot. There's a lot going on.
And you were the youngest, right? You're the youngest of the four boys.
Yes, I'm the youngest of the four. So, and I was the good one. So. Or at least as I tell the story. Anyway.
A little embellishment, maybe?
No, he was a very kind, but when he lost his temper, head for the hills. That's all I can say. Head for the hills. Anyway, we're going to talk with Shawnee's dad in about a half an hour. We're going to talk with Andy Mazur's dad also. Andy at the last minute.
That'll be fun.
Pulled over to cover for Ed Farmer today on the White Sox broadcast. But both Andy and his dad will join us so we can acknowledge dads on the show today. My dad passed away in 1996, so I'm remembering him fondly today.
Yeah, as well. You know, we
telling
remember
stories of how he beat me. That's a nice tribute.
But, you know, we do remember, as we do on Mother's Day, you know, mothers, fathers, grandfathers, you know, all of those who, tried to set the best examples, which
right.
they did.
Right, right. Yeah, you know what? They did the best job they could possibly do.
Which they did do, yes.
99.9% of the parents do the best job they can possibly do. So, you know, you can't, you know, at some point, I know plenty of people in life that don't let it go, that ought to let it go. And, you know, today we're going to remember dads fondly today, both dads that are still with us. Dads that have passed away, and hopefully for whom we still have wonderful memories. We're going to pay tribute to all of them today. In addition, we've got all kinds of things going on today, like my nice conversation with Jim Gaffigan was in town this week. And last night, Jon Favreau and Robert Downey Jr. In town. There's a big gala that was put on by the Gene Siskel Film Center over at the Four Seasons Hotel. And the Siskel Center gave Favreau their Renaissance Award, kind of a career achievement award. And Favreau was the one, or Downey was the one presenting the award to Favreau, their great buddies. And they walked the red carpet before the event. I chatted with them. We'll share that with you coming up this morning as well. So we've got a lot of things coming up. Larry Potash from the WGN-TV Morning News is going to join us this morning to tell us about his backstory program that is on tonight. So we've got a lot of good stuff here today. Let us take a quick break, and we'll get to Favreau and Downey, Iron Man himself, next WGN. On the WGN-TV Morning News, I'll be showing you more of my red carpet interviews with Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr., Jon Favreau, who directed the first two Iron Man movies. I remember so distinctly in 2008 the battle that was going on between Jon Favreau, who directed the Iron Man movie, and Marvel movies. When Favreau wanted Robert Downey Jr. to star in this movie. Downey, who had, if you remember, he's completely turned his life around, but back in the day, had a history of drug abuse, had a history of trouble with the law, was not the most reliable person in the world. Great actor, but not the most reliable person in the world. And Favreau fought and fought and fought and fought to get Robert Downey Jr. that role, which really turned his career around, turned his life completely around. When I talked with them both on the red carpet last night, they talked about it.
You know, I remember talking with both of you before Iron Man came out about what a pivotal time it was in your life and what you went through because you had such faith in yes. Robert for that role.
Now look like a genius.
Yeah.
Look at that, what, 10, 11 years later? Yeah, so now it's, yeah, I think the Iron Man arc is complete, and he's done us all proud, huh?
Yeah. What was it that you saw, though, that, I mean, like, you really insisted that you needed him?
I ask myself that every day. I don't know what,
it is.
You know, funny, in success, everyone starts rewriting their history. Let's be honest here. I did him a solid. Now,
it's true.
But the other funny thing is, and the reason I'm so glad to be here doing this Gene Siskel thing for the Film Center and giving him the Renaissance Award is because this is kind of like closing a circle for us. So this is my Lion King moment with him, where I get to come back to my gal's hometown. To
where I started.
Where he started. Okay, right. Tonight's going to be memory lane.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
What was it that John has contributed to you? I mean, this award that he's getting here tonight is... for his body of work is obvious. Yeah. To you.
I'm all over his body of work. Why do you think I'm here?
Yeah.
No, he is the single central empowerment figure in my life creatively.
Thank you. Thank you.
Male.
And this is my...
And then the missus.
And of course the wives.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we're also, we click and we enjoy each other's work more. I think I'm the president of the Robert Downey Fan Club. I love his work when we work together. I love his work even more when we don't, because I appreciate it more from a distance. But I'm really happy he came here to do this tonight. It's a special night to be in Chicago with us, and it's even more special that a guy like this who's got... A very busy life makes the time to come out here and be part of this.
So he, had a special night at the Four Seasons Hotel, arguably one of the finest hotels in the world. Fine evening there last night. That Favreau said, "I'm going to Wiener Circle when I get out of here." He wanted to get some hot dogs and insults. Apparently, I'll tell you more about the event last night. Later this morning, we'll check news. And the far-flung forecast coming up next, WGN. Probably glad there's not going to be rain, so you could treat your dad to a nice barbecue today.
Actually, we're going out to a restaurant that's been around for almost 90 years.
Too lazy to grill for your dad?
I'm too lazy. I will admit. Okay. I could do it, but a little bit too lazy to do that.
All right. Okay.
You know, I'm working hard here.
It's
in the
not like room. He, scraped to do, sacrifice for you.
Now you're...
You just go to the little restaurant. That's fine. Don't you worry.
Where other people are giving up their Father's Day to work, right?
That's fine.
We have 58 at O'Hare, Midway 60, Frankfurt 59, Chicago's Lakefront 59, and our far-flung forecast today takes us...
Hang on one second. Mr. Schwann, are you okay with that, going to a restaurant instead of having your son make a nice Father's Day meal for you from scratch, from his own two hands?
Oh, yes, that's fine. Yes, looking forward to it.
Restaurant's okay?
He doesn't trust my cooking.
That's a whole different thing. The key to his longevity. This is Paul Schwann on the phone, Dave Schwann's dad. Happy Father's Day to you.
Well, thank you, Dean. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's so nice to hear your voice and doing great. I thought we would have you join us for the far-flung forecast
today. That's fine. I listen to it every Sunday.
As you know, also my favorite part of the show as well.
Thank you.
So, Schwanny, no pressure. Make your dad proud.
I will. We go to... I hope so.
I'd be nervous if my dad was on the line.
Actually,
listening to me
It's always a little nerve-wracking to do this.
The unpredictability factor?
Right. Yeah. That's right. But we go to Fairmont, West Virginia today. Fairmont, West Virginia is...
Mr. Schwann, has he ever taken you to Fairmont, West Virginia on one of your road trips?
Not that I remember. Although my memory is getting a little... faulty, I'm sure.
But you've gone on many, many road trips with your son.
Oh, that's true, right? Yeah.
What was your favorite trip that you went on with your son?
Well, I think one of most recent was about 5 years ago when we did Scandinavia, Denmark,
wow.
Norway, and Sweden.
Wow.
And
yeah.
that was really a great trip.
Yeah.
That was a good one. And we covered all three of those countries, too, didn't we?
Yeah.
On the road,
right, yeah. Right.
But Fairmont, West Virginia, goes back to the 1700s. It is the county seat of Marion County, but we also mentioned Fairmont, West Virginia, because it is the home of one lady named Grace Golden Clayton. Mm. She was, in 1908, as long as well as many other people in the area.
Let's be 1908?
1908, okay. Not 2008, okay. But 1908,
yeah.
Was in a state of mourning because her father was killed in a mining disaster, along with many other people. But she had heard of an observance of Mother's Day in Grafton, West Virginia, not far from Fairmont. So she got the idea and approached her minister at the Central United Methodist Church. Let's honor our fathers.
Oh, what an idea.
So Fairmont, West Virginia, at least in the United States, is the home to one of the very first Memorial Day, Father's Day observances. We also, in 1911, there was a lady in Chicago named Jane Addams that proposed a citywide Father's Day celebration.
Yeah.
She was turned down.
Wow.
She approached the city council, but she was turned down. They said they weren't going to do it. But Fairmont, West Virginia is
the origins
of Father's Day, and they are looking at cloudy skies today, but warmer than we are. It's 72.
Wow.
In Fairmont.
That's a very nice little "this is how it all got started" story.
That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, very, very nice. Mr. Schwann, did you enjoy that as well?
I think that was very fine,
Don't you think he, his little far-flung forecasts that he does every week, they're very informative, they're educational, they're fun, they're everything that we could possibly want.
That's right. That's right.
That's why this is a Peabody Award-winning program.
Very good.
It's one thing to lie on the air. Don't lie right to your father's face like this. So when did you realize, Paul, of, Schwannies, or, I'm sorry, that's what I call him. I'm going to call him Schwanny. When did you first, realize that he had a gift for telling stories like this and that broadcasting was going to be his avocation?
He's getting close to 63, probably 55 years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, as a youngster, very youngster.
As a very young boy, for instance, when we went to church, although he had friends his age at church, he would enjoy talking with some of the older members and hearing stories from them and that sort of thing.
Oh.
And then when we used to give him gifts, like a toy tape recorder, he would go around the neighborhood and interview the parents of his
boyhood friends
wow. Just to get stories from older people.
Wow.
And they in turn would call my mother and say, tell him to come home.
Get him out of here. He's back here with that tape recorder. Get him out of here.
Right. Yeah, but that's the only thing he ever wanted to do, as far as we know, right?
Wow.
Right. He had that urge early in life and stayed with it, obviously.
Yeah, so you could see that was going to be something that he was interested in for the rest of his life.
That's exactly right, yes. Right.
What's a great story about a little Schwanny?
Please.
What's a really cute funny story about little Davy?
Well, there are a lot of them, I guess.
Take your time. I got nothing but time.
one of them, we were out east on a trip. And we stopped looking for MIT nearby
MIT
Boston.
And Harvard. I know where you're
and
going
Harvard,
with this.
Right.
Yeah.
And he had his little tape recorder with him, and we stopped to ask a policeman on the corner where Harvard was. And he had the broadest New England accent, a Boston accent, and Dave whipped out his recorder and recorded him. And he still has that tape.
Do you really?
He doesn't know where it is, but
it's
he
in
has
a box.
It.
Yeah.
And
this man had the classic Bostonian New England Hada accent.
Yeah,
And, oh, man.
And you got your tape recorder out to record
and
because
I
you were hearing an accent you hadn't heard in Indiana before.
That's right, yes.
I hate to use up too much of Andy's time coming up, but the story about the Target cash registers reminded me of one thing. And when I was growing up, I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, but I was born and raised there, and we had three major department stores in town. And one of them didn't have cash registers.
Huh.
When you bought your picked out your purchase, you took it to a counter and a salesman, and he made out a paper slip.
Yeah.
And you gave him your money enough to cover it, and he put the money and the paper slip in a little tube and put it in a pneumatic tube, which went up to his room on the second floor of the store, where they opened it and put in the proper change and gave you a receipt for your purchase. And that was the only store in Grand Rapids that had a pneumatic tube system.
So that was there was no money being transacted at all at the point of purchase.
That's exactly right.
They sent it upstairs, and then they sent the change back downstairs in the tube.
Down. I suppose there were a number of stores in Chicago, being a much bigger city, that maybe used that system, but I was fascinated by it. And one of the other stores had an escalator. It only went up one floor, but I liked riding that escalator because it was different.
Yeah, space age. It was space age.
It's amazing the amount of mechanical and electronic things that I've seen
in your lifetime.
In my lifetime.
Right. I was
not to mention airplanes.
Yeah.
One thing about airplanes, I think I'm getting too old to travel by air. Dave and I just came back from a trip to the Dakotas.
Right.
And saved from driving time, we flew up to Minneapolis to get a head start.
Right.
And I had trouble opening the little bag of pretzels. I think I'm too old to fly because I can't get the pretzels open.
Can't get the pretzels open. That's a big problem to have. That's a big problem to have. So talking about the stores, when you would take Dave shopping, what would he have his allowance or whatever spending money? What would he spend his money on as a little boy?
Records.
Very true.
He started a library years and years ago. Of course, they were all 78s back then, but
they weren't that far.
But most of his spending money was spent on records, and later tapes and that sort of thing.
Well, yeah. I love hearing you tell stories. I love hearing your voice.
Thank you.
I love when we see each other once or twice a year.
Yes. I've seen you three times, a couple
right.
of times.
I hope we see you soon. I hope you have a wonderful Father's Day today.
I expect to have, right. Dave will be out later, and that always makes it great, right?
Well, despite that, I still hope you have a nice Father's Day.
Thank you. Looking forward to listening to Andy and his father.
We're going to get to that coming up next. All the best to you. Continued
thank you, Dean.
Great health. It's wonderful to hear you.
Very good. Thank you.
All right.
I call this man father.
Color him father.
I think I'll color him love.
Color him love.
Father's Day.
I'm gonna color him
2019.
Color him father.
I think I'll color
are you breathing a little easier now, Shawnee?
Yes, what an appropriate song.
Your dad is great.
That was a wonderful interview.
Thank God. I would have loved more embarrassing stories.
Well, I was hoping that he wasn't going to tell a few that
not
I had
I was,
in
not
mind.
That I was fishing for them or anything.
I want to say very quickly his story about department stores and the way that cash rate. I'll bet you that pneumatic system never broke down. I'll bet you there was customer satisfaction taken care of.
On a pneumatic system at my Target store.
Andy Mazur, are you there?
I am here.
Good morning, Andy.
Andy Mazur.
Good morning, Shawnee.
Who is
morning,
going
Dean.
To be covering for Ed Farmer on the White Sox broadcast today.
Yes, sir.
He's getting ready for the broadcast today, but wanted to wish your dad happy Father's Day as well, who's on the line with us. Steve Mazur is on with us. Mr. Mazur, welcome.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and a good morning to all of you, and a happy Father's Day to all your listeners and everybody over there in WGN.
So, you know, mostly I'm looking for, like, super embarrassing stories.
Oh, I got about... it.
Don't go there.
Do you have another hour or two?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do.
I've got the one that sticks out in my mind, Andy. You'll remember, we went to a PTA meeting. You know where I'm going with this, Andy?
I already said that I knew this was the one you're going to tell.
Oh, it must be a good one.
We were sitting there. I don't think Andy was 6 or 7 years old, but never deterred him from, you know, from talking in front of adults. He was very comfortable in talking in front of a group of people. Didn't always know what he was going to say, but he said them. And we were talking about the Bears. I think it was a former quarterback. Who was it? Who was
it was Concannon.
Concannon, right. And he was talking about it in the Bears, and Andy raises his hand, and what is he going to say? He asked the question, will Bobby Douglas be making more tackles? Now, this was a Bear quarterback. If I didn't have my shovel with me, otherwise it would have dug the hole and covered it up and disappeared.
Yeah.
It's never afraid to talk in front of people.
Well, you know, and also always asking the challenging question, you know, which, you know, he's certainly not afraid to do these days either.
Oh, my God. He's unbelievable. We knew he was going to be a broadcaster. Should I tell him why, Andy?
Okay, go ahead.
Andy talked real early, full sentences by the time he was a year old.
Wow.
And I'm serious. And people didn't believe him until he started talking in front of them, and then they believed him. But at 2 years old, he took his Lincoln Logs and would walk around the house interviewing his mother.
Wow.
Me, anybody about the Cubs at the time. Excuse me. I know he's doing the Sox now. But and his hero was Jack Brickhouse. Not Harry Carey, not anybody, but Jack Brickhouse.
How about that?
And he just loved Jack Brickhouse. And he would interview, and then somebody gave him a Mr. Mike. I don't know if it was my wife or a friend of ours. And if I could find that person, I'd strangle him today. Unbelievable.
Good old Mr. Microphone.
Oh, my God, it was awful.
But your first interviewing tools was a piece of Lincoln Log that you would put in front of somebody's mouth like a microphone.
Yeah. And you should have seen people running from me when they see me coming, because they knew they were in for a long interview.
I hid.
Isn't that something, though? Isn't that something, though, at that age, that was in him then? You know, it was just something that was intuitive and, you know, clearly something that was a passion for him.
Like Schwanee, Andy never deterred from what he wanted to do in life. I mean, he went to even in school, he was on the radio station, and he excuse me, he and another fella had a morning show at the school station in Maine East, and I got to tell you something, they were quite good. And he then went to Bradley University, where a lot of good broadcasters came out of, and he never, ever deterred. His grades were great in those subjects he was interested in that he had to do with communications, and not so great in the other subjects. He was great accounting courses.
Oh, goodness gracious. My dad's a CPA, by the way, a retired CPA.
Oh, so that must have broken your heart that he didn't go into the family line of work.
No, well, it broke my heart. If he would have gone into it, he called me the night before a final. They asked me a question, which it showed me, obviously, he had absolutely no knowledge of accounting. And it was the final. And I crossed it, please, dear God, just let him pass. Yeah. And he did. He got a C. What was it, C minus?
Yeah,
C plus?
Got a C, yeah.
Thank God.
Andy, tell us about your dad. How did your dad help to create who you are?
Well, I mean, he and my mom have always been very, very, very supportive, whether it be just encouragement or, you know, unfortunately, financially toward the end of school when I was staying in Peoria and trying to start my career. And they basically had to support me a little bit because I wasn't really making a whole lot of money at the stations that I was working at. Yeah, but the things that about my dad that I've always appreciated were the times I was playing Little League Baseball, no matter what he was doing. Could have been the middle of tax season, which, you know, we saw him in the morning and maybe late at night after dinner. He would find the time to go out at the game and encourage and yell. And, you know, he was not one of these parents that, of today that if I wasn't playing, he wouldn't call the coach and wouldn't whine about Andy's not playing time. He would say, well, why aren't you playing more? What do you think? I mean, do you want to go out to the park and let's go practice? He would throw baseballs to me for hours.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, that's always the thing that I've appreciated about him in particular. I mean, just always being there.
Well, we're late for the news, Andy. I know you're going to find that hard to believe. We've never done that on the show ever before, but I didn't want to interrupt. Mr. Mazur, Steve Mazur, thank you so much for joining us. Very, very happy Father's Day to you, and we appreciate you joining us. You know you'll be able to hear your son on White Sox baseball today coming up.
Oh, my God, really? Oh, I can hardly wait. What time is that going to be?
Your dad's a great accountant and actor, too, at the same time. Very nice.
It'll be 1:10 Central Time if you're in the Central Time Zone.
Goodness gracious, I'll make sure I have the time available.
Happy Father's Day to you, Steve, and Andy will hear you on the air coming up later on. We'll take a break and update news next, WGN. Father's Day this morning. We're all having a wonderful morning. Let's go to the phones and say happy Father's Day to Larry Podash, who is out. Are you having a Father's Day brunch right now, breakfast, something like that right now?
I just got back. Happy Father's Day to everybody out there.
Do you have like Father's Day where your kids are older now? Both teenagers now, both of your daughters, I think?
My youngest is not a teenager. My oldest is, which is why she is still asleep.
did they do cute daughter things for you for Father's Day? You know, make you things like that when they were younger?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We'll find out what happens today. Things are running slow on this rainy Sunday.
It's a sleepy Sunday morning. Everyone getting ready.
Yeah.
Larry likes to keep his kids quiet and asleep early so they can stay up late to watch his show, Backstory.
Right.
Forces them to watch the show every Sunday night.
Right. You got to do what you can, Dean, in this day and age of TV. It's not like 1975 when the whole world watched All in the Family, right?
That's right. The kids have a lot of options these days.
Yeah.
Where else are they going to learn about the DeLorean? That's one of the topics on your Backstory show tonight at 8:30 on WGN.
Yeah, what's interesting is a lot of people wanted to make the DeLorean story for a number of years, and nobody could until this local guy from the suburbs, western suburbs, got the rights to the story, and the reason he got the rights is because when he was a kid, he was a big fan of the car and decided to call DeLorean one day and say, hey, I'm going to be in New Jersey. Can I stop by your estate? And DeLorean said, sure.
Wow.
And that's the short story about how he obtained the rights to the DeLorean story, and it's kind of like a docudrama. So it's a documentary, but they reenact scenes, and Alec Baldwin stars as John DeLorean. And so most people know, hey, cool car in the movie, and there was some kind of briefcase of cocaine. And that's all anybody pretty much knows. And the backstory is really interesting, which is why everybody wanted to make the John DeLorean movie.
Well, you know, and people think DeLorean, to get all this like real information about this, because people think DeLorean, they think Back to the Future. You know, that's the extent of their knowledge with DeLorean. So it'll be cool to learn more. And didn't you talk to Alec Baldwin about this, didn't you?
We did. We talked to him on the show a week or so ago. And he's sort of in between. You know, he just had, as you know, married and has four young kids. And so I think that the big movies have been on hold while he's been at home. And this was a project that I think fit in his schedule. And it's really kind of interesting to see them recreate scenes that are in, like, FBI surveillance tapes and so forth. And Alec actually was called by DeLorean many years ago to play him in one of those movie projects that never got made, because DeLorean in real life was very much a leading man type of character.
Can't wait to get the full story on that. You also are going to be digging into the story of an IRA murder mystery?
Yeah, so again, the IRA, people have some recollection of bombings in England and in Belfast, and you know, they have a general sense of what that's about. But this journalist investigated the disappearance of a widowed mother of, I forget how many kids, six or seven kids. Masked men break into their house one night, take her away. She says, "Don't worry, kids, I'll be back." She never came back. So he is investigating this, and little does he know that he ended up solving the murder, and the murderer is still alive. And the way he was able to do this was there is a secret archive which some IRA members talked, and nobody was supposed to know about it until they died. But the word got out, and so it's an interesting story with lots of twists and turns to give you an idea of what that whole IRA battle was about through the story of one family.
And also, as I've mentioned to you, one of the things I enjoy, I mean, these stories are so interesting, but you dig up stuff out of the WGN film archives. Such cool stuff. And you've got auto show footage from like over 30 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, we found a couple of auto show packages from the mid-late 80s. And one of them was done by our old friend Jim Ramsey, who recently retired. Even though he was the weather guy, he also did some features now and then. And so it's fun to see a young Jim Ramsey at the auto show. And you'll see some old cars like the Pulsar. Remember the Pulsar, Dean?
Yes, I do.
And there was a new car called a Hyundai, which you could get for like $7,000, which even at the time was pretty cheap for a new car. And boy, you can really see, for those who don't remember, what a piece of junk that car was.
The Hyundai that became the Hyundai that we know today, though, right?
Yeah, sure. It's the same company, but this is how they started out with these junky, new, affordable cars. I mean, at the time, I remember these came out in like, I want to say 86, and I had this old Chevette, and I thought, you know what? I'm happy with my Chevette. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there is no other show, I guarantee you this, on television tonight that will feature the early Hyundai, the Pulsar, and Jim Ramsey from 30 years ago, probably smoking cigarettes while he was walking through the auto show. Here's the Pulsar. Backstory is on 8:30 tonight on WGN. Larry, have a great Father's Day. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Thank you, too. Thank you, Dean. Take care.
For the Week in Theater. What's going on stage in Chicago? We talk about a lot of the big shows that are going on in town. Time to time, we like to cover some of the theaters that really make up the pulse of the Chicago theater scene. And that includes Pride Films and Plays, put on at the Pride Arts Center. Their executive director is David Zach, and he joins us on the phone line right now. David, good morning. Happy Pride Month to you.
Well, thank you, Dean. And Pride is just one of those things you have to leave the house to do. I'm sorry to say. We got to get you out of the house to go see some shows.
I got to figure out the best way for me to be a hermit in my senior, my golden years.
Your golden years, yeah. Hardly, believe me.
I think it would be. Difficult because we do have so much going on in Chicago, and I love going to theater. I especially love going to the kind of theater that you've been producing for years and years and years and years, and other of the non-big theaters downtown that always turn out and produce such thought-provoking and interesting productions.
Chicago has a history of the smaller, you know, niche theaters that do specific work, but work that really appeals to everybody and needs to be seen by everybody.
Yeah.
So our stuff is LGBTQ-themed, but we love when everybody comes to see Priscilla, or whether it's a musical or whether it's a historical piece or whatever. It's really great that audiences of all kinds find their way here to the Pride Arts Center. It's fantastic.
We're so lucky to have so many so-called storefront theaters in Chicago, although yours is, I think, a little bit more than that. Talk to me a little bit about the history of what you've been doing. You know, this is a landmark year for LGBTQ with the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. But and the progression of what you've done, it's not 50 years, but it's how many years now since you've been doing show?
More than 30, I do believe.
Yeah, I was going to say, a pretty long time that I've known about it, a pretty long time, yeah.
Yeah, and the work continues to evolve for the community from the very beginning. When I started, there was a lot of work with AIDS and mourning and building a community. Now the literature is much more varied, but we also believe really strongly in history, that tying history into new writing is the best thing for us. So tonight, for example, you could see a piece called Mad About the Boy, which celebrates Noel Coward, who is just one of the greats. It's a Noel Coward cabaret starring Robert Rohde, who is a wonderful author here in town, and it's a one-night event, but that sort of is typical of the kind of thing that you will find on our schedule, something that is interesting, something that is important, and something that is just as relevant today as it was when he was writing back in the days of the jazz age, writing all those great shows Design for Living and all that sort of stuff.
Now, is this like a spoken word show? Is this music?
It's a sung piece. You might have seen Robert at Davenport's if you're in the cabaret circuit. So Julian Chin is on the piano and Matt Gold is on the bass. So a little two-piece combo, and he is singing and doing some of the poetry of Noel Coward. But it's really great.
What else? Now you've expanded. It used to be that you would be doing productions for a shorter amount of time, but now it's Pride Month and you've got productions going on all over the place. And films, I might add. It's Pride films and plays these days.
Yes. Yeah, so we don't have any films this month. There's plenty of other great things to choose from, like the Gene Siskel Film Center. A lot of places have special Pride programs, but we have two theaters, so we have a couple things running now that have been, in one case, one show called Afterglow, which is an off-Broadway hit. That's been running since March. And it's great to be able to extend, you know, shows when they're successful and finding new audiences.
Hey, you want me to, David, you want me to take a little quick break here? You can grab a little water.
That sounds great.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
I know that sound very, very well. It's happened to me a million times. We'll come back and talk more with David Zack, who's the executive director of Pride Films and Plays here in Chicago, right after this. 10:52, it's Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, our weekend theater segment, focusing in and celebrating Pride Month. We are here on WGN Radio, WGN TV, and really celebrations going on all over the place. Talking with David Zack, who's the executive director of Pride Films and Plays. David, before we jump back into what you have going on for Pride Month, just talk to me a little bit about the evolution of Pride. I mean, you see commemorations of it all over the city now, which you never used to see.
Right. I think it's very interesting to see how it has become sort of a mainstream event, a family event, in some ways a very family-friendly event. But at the same time, I would say that there's a lot of people who are a little bit weird, or not weird, worried that that for all the progress that's been made, that there's still many challenges that remain, especially in this political atmosphere that we're dealing with. That there's a lot of things that seem to be threatened to be pulled back. So gay marriage, you know, is that permanent? We don't know. We hope so. You know, so there's a lot of pride in the progress that has been made. There's a lot of excitement about our mayor, excitement about presidential candidates. I mean, what a great time. And who would have thought a few few years ago that we would have been in a situation like that. But having said that, none of us are confident enough that we can just relax and say, let's just assume that all our work is done. It's not yet, and everybody knows, I think, you know, that there's still a lot of work to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, people are still, you know, beaten up and brutalized because of
yes.
who they are. There's still violence that goes on. There's still, you know, bullying, discrimination, you know, job discrimination and otherwise that still goes on. You know, things that affect, amazingly, that still affect people's lives on a day-to-day basis. You'd think we would be past all of that.
Well, and there's just much more discussion about gender, you know, pronouns and gender and trans people. There's so much more that has trickled out to the general public than ever would have before.
Yeah.
You know, when in my parents' days, people weren't talking about any of that sort of stuff. So it was always amazing that we've come so far. It would just take a couple brave people to take the progress really much farther. If a major, you know, a team sports player was brave enough to
right.
come out
right.
while they were playing, that would be awesome. If there were other people in the political world or the entertainment world even who were confident enough that they could come out, it would make such a deal because, you know, we all loved how great the Obama family was as a role model for families of all kinds. Now we're finding that we need other kind of role models for LGBTQ, you know, kids. Who still have one of the highest rates of suicide and the highest rates of
right.
bullying,
right.
unbelievably so.
Well, I think one of the great ways that, you know, people can learn about other people, I mean, you know, certainly through the news and, you know, talking to people and listening instead of yelling. But one of the great ways to learn is through the arts. And I think that that's a lot of what you guys do with Pride Films and Plays. Of taking these stories of LGBTQ stories, putting them on stage or putting them on film, and, you know, people learn about other people who they're living next door to.
Right. And it's very gratifying to see the discussions in the lobby sometimes with, you know, people who are in their 20s and people who are in their 60s who you might not have thought, oh, this is a group that might not have that much in common. But then when they start talking about something in the play, and then people realize, oh, I thought this was the important thing, and then somebody who's 40 years older than us says, you know, yeah, absolutely, because it was the same way when we were coming out, and you 20-year-olds, you know, don't know everything. You know, it's great that you can have those sort of conversations about theater pieces and about writing that just touches us in ways that we don't experience. You know, you don't experience it when you're sitting at home and watching a Netflix, or when you're in the library reading a book. The theater will always be that spot where this communal wave of laughter is the sort of thing that brings everybody together and makes you go, boy, I really, you know, even though it's a crappy day today, I'm really glad I got out of the house
right.
and
yeah.
went to see a ticket and bought a ticket for $20 or something
yeah,
and had an experience which is different from my own.
Here's just something to think about and to talk yeah. about. So aside from Mad About the Boy, the Noel Coward show, which is one night only tonight
yeah,
at the
tonight.
Pride Arts Center, what else do you have going on for Pride Month?
Yeah, for Afterglow, which is, as I said before, a New York hit, which is now running to the end of the month. There is also an opera called Grindr the Opera, which is a very funny, funny, funny piece about dating. And a new drama by a Latinx playwright called Desire in a Tinier House, which is about two people who meet and their relationship lasts thousands of years. And if you want to see how that works out, you have to come to this theater to
okay.
see that, because it's not an easy thing to explain. But it's a really beautiful piece and really a great piece of about knowing who your soulmate is, and knowing how, despite everything, you can figure out who that soulmate is, even if it's thousands of years between the last time you saw them.
That's
so it's fun. It's you know, metaphysical, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's some laughter in these shows. There's a variety of things, obviously. And we like when people, we do a lot of subscription passes so people can come back again and again and again, or bring their flex passes so you can bring your friends and just keep picking out your own seats. And the theaters are small, so you really get a great experience of being up close to the action, which is fun.
Yeah, every seat is a good one. If people want to get more info, pridefilmsandplays.com, is that right?
It is.
David Zak is the executive director. Happy Pride Month, and thank you for joining us today. Always nice to talk to you.
Great. Thanks, Dean. I appreciate it.
Yep. Are you trying to sound bad?
I'm trying to sound bad.
And I'm not doing it. I'm pretty bad at it.
You are bad at being bad, I will say. The movie Shaft, the new version, which I liked. It did not get a lot of good reviews, but I thought it was funny, and I recommended it. Only debuted in the number 7 spot. Not a good debut for Shaft. It's a bad opening, Schwani. That's what that would be. Bad and not in a good way.
That's too bad.
That's too bad.
It is. It's too bad.
It is too bad. Men in Black International, which was genuinely bad, is the number 1 movie. It debuted.
You didn't like that one?
Oh, it's horrible.
Is it really?
It's horrible. $28.5 million was the box office number that came out this morning. Secret Life of Pets 2, Aladdin, X-Men, and Rocket Man, the Elton John movie, still in the top 5 right now. So I get an email last night from somebody saying that they went to see Shaft, and they actually agreed with my review. They said that they also enjoyed it very much, despite the fact that it got kind of mixed reviews. But they said they went to the show, and they look over a couple of seats away from them, and they see somebody who looks familiar to them. And the guy, Michael, is the guy who sent me the email, said, "The man looks suspiciously like George Lucas."
Oh.
Said, I didn't want to bother him. I did, but, you know, we watched the movie. Said, "I agree with your review. Dean's List B+, very accurate. The end credits began. The house lights came back up, and I couldn't hold it anymore. I leaned over and asked someone if that gentleman seated next to me was George Lucas. And somebody that worked at the theater confirmed that it was George Lucas.
It really was him.
And that he comes to this theater fairly often."
Wow.
I guess I won't say which theater it is. So we don't want to, you know, if the guy's trying to go to the movies once in a while.
Yeah, just hang out.
Just leave him alone.
Be inconspicuous.
But how about that?
George Lucas.
You go to see Shaft. You're sitting there seeing Shaft next to the unbelievably innovative George Lucas.
I wonder what George thought of the movie.
I wonder what he ate during the movie. That's what I would have wanted to know.
Oh, there.
Is he a milk dud man?
Is
he a milk dud man? Is he a popcorn eater? Is he a Twizzler? Is he one of those obnoxious people that eat nachos and the stinky cheese?
What about Raisinets?
Raisinets?
I like Raisinets.
I'm for anything that's quiet.
Yeah, the Raisinets are quiet.
Yeah. But that's pretty cool, right? George Lucas.
Oh, very cool. But I would be curious to find out what he thought of the movie.
What he thought of Shaft.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Lucas, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are,
give us a call.
Wouldn't that be funny if he called and I left him on hold like I did the time Drew Carey
called? Drew Carey called.
When Drew Carey, when I did something similar and yeah, Drew Carey called.
No, this isn't really Drew Carey.
I thought it was somebody goofing around, so I left him on hold for half an hour.
And it was Drew Carey.
It was Drew Carey. So if George Lucas is listening, I'd like to get his review. I'll bet he liked it, though. It's funny. It's funny. I mean, it's not a movie that's going to change anyone's life. But if you here's the way I'm describing it. If you took an episode of Blackish and you put John Shaft in the plot line, that's what this movie is.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's a funny movie.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go see it, and then on Netflix, I'm going to get the original Shaft and do an A-B comparison.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And write up a full book report for us?
Yes.
Okay.
What I did on my summer vacation.
watched all the versions of Shaft. That sounds fun. In summertime. You know who's here?
Who's here?
My friend Pamela Powell.
Hi, Pamela.
Hello. How are you?
Hang on a second. We got to turn your microphone on. There we can hear you now.
There
Hello there.
Hello. How are you?
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I'm doing well. Doing
good.
Well.
What would you do if you look over and George Lucas is sitting next to you? in a movie theater. It's a downtown theater. I'll tell you that. That's all I'll say. It was one of the downtown theaters where you and I see movies all the time.
Oh, really? Yep. Wow. Yep. I don't know it. I think I would stutter up a storm and probably not know what to do.
Would you try to make a little conversation going, or would you leave him alone?
I would leave him alone. I think that's one of the beauties of Chicago is we tend to leave celebrities alone and let them have their space, which I think they deserve.
Yeah.
Wow. That'd be incredible. I bet you he went to see Shaft based on your recommendation, which is what I'm going to do as well.
I'm sure that's the case. I'm sure George Lucas looks to me for advice on.
Don't we all?
Don't we all? And that's the problem with society today, by the way. Too many people are listening to what I say. That is the problem. You've heard Pamela on the show here with us before. She is a film critic with FF2 Media, with WCIA Television 3, on which you frequently appear, and also FET Lifestyle Magazine, the Daily Journal, and FET Lifestyle Magazine as well. And I think one of the great film critics that we have here in Chicago as well.
Thank you.
So it's nice to have you here. But anything that you've seen lately that you've really loved?
I loved Late Night. I thought that was wonderful. Mindy Kaling and Emma Thompson are in that. And I hope that that gets some great buzz going because it's a wonderful film that really gives us a nice perspective about these two women at different ends of their careers in the entertainment industry.
Right.
I thoroughly enjoy that. And being frank, I don't think that's opened up here in
it
Chicago
opens,
yet.
Next Friday.
Next Friday.
The Jim Gaffigan movie.
Yes.
Opens next Friday, right?
Right. Directed by Miranda Bailey. Yeah. Talented woman. So.
Yeah, there's some nice little movies that are out right now.
Right.
I mean, aside from all the, you know, the big movies that are out there, all of those. Did you see The Dead Don't Die?
I haven't yet. I listened to the show, your show, on Friday morning, and I thought, I've got to put that on my list to see.
I think it's not for everybody. This may be a Dean Richards Cult of One kind of weekend where I'm the only one liking some of these movies. But I think it's absolutely hilarious. It's a zombie comedy. It's a spoof of zombie movies. But Bill Murray's in it, and Adam Driver, and Steve Buscemi is hilarious in it, and Tilda Swinton is hilarious in it. It's got a really interesting ensemble.
It definitely does. That's a cool
and
cast.
It does not take itself seriously for 1 minute. So I'm also recommending that. But I didn't ask Pamela to stop by this morning to talk about movies so much. I wanted to talk about an experience that you had with these genetic testing services that are out, the Ancestry.com, 23andMe, those kinds of things that a lot of people are doing, and learning things about their past. I did the 23andMe, and I pretty much my results are where I thought they were going to be. I found out I'm 10% Sicilian, which I never knew before, which I don't know what to do with that information exactly, but now that's what the genetics turned up. But you had a very different experience that resulted in you finding your biological family that you never knew prior to this.
Right. It's still a bit of a whirlwind of a story. My husband got me a 23andMe kit probably over 2 years ago. It took me about a year of it being dusted on the counter and then moved and cleaned under, and then I finally did it. The results that came back, the reason why I wanted to do it wasn't to find my family. It was to find out health issues. I'm in my 50s. Do I need to be on the lookout for breast cancer or ovarian cancer or any of those kinds of things? And 23andMe gives us some predisposed genetic markers that we can be aware of those things. Also, I have children, adult children, and I think that that's only fair to them to give them that information. So that was my primary goal with doing the test.
We should mention also that you were adopted.
Right,
so
correct.
So you didn't really have any biological family history at your disposal.
Exactly, which is the reason why my husband had given me that kit, because I didn't have that information. So you go to the doctor and you say, so do you have any family history of X, Y, or Z? And it's like, I have nothing.
Don't know.
Right. Yeah. So any additional information that came from this, I thought would just be a bonus. And, you know, you kind of get your hopes up here and there as to, you know, will I find, you know, my long lost family of who is my mother, my biological mother, who is my biological father? And I got a lot of great results back, but I didn't know what to do with them. It was just like if you threw 10,000 piece puzzles up into the air and all the pieces came down, try and put that together. Right. And that's kind of how I felt when I got all my information. I had no idea which side of the family these people were related to.
Because with those results, you also get a list of people who with whom you have common biological DNA characteristics.
Right.
So you had this list of names,
right,
that meant nothing to you, probably, right?
None whatsoever. Yeah. And it comes back with, as you're talking about, how closely you're related. They're measured in centimorgans. So, you know, 23 centimorgans isn't very much. 2,000 is a lot. So anywhere in between there. And so I really wasn't able to make heads or tails of anything until, coincidentally, on the week of my birthday, somebody's results came in. You get an email saying
updates, yeah.
Updates as to who's related to you. And all of a sudden, I had actually two emails on my birthday saying that you're related to this woman who's a second cousin. And I recognized the name. I knew the name. I went to high school with this woman.
Oh, wow.
In a very, very small town in upstate New York. Less than 2,000 people in this town.
Wow.
So to think that I was going to school with this woman and not knowing that she was my second cousin. So immediately you combine science and social media. So Facebook, here I come, yeah. Started messaging.
Well, let me take a break.
Sure.
Let me leave it with that cliffhanger for
okay.
just a moment of what happened when you contacted this person and coupled it with social media and did some of your own investigative work on what happened. Pamela Powell in with us this morning to tell the story. We'll finish it up next, WGN News, where film critic Pamela Powell is with us this morning, not to talk about movies, but to talk about a story that could become a movie. I mean, the story of how you found your family through starting off with 23andMe. You get a line from 23andMe that a cousin who had also done 23andMe, and I guess they matched up your DNA and said that there are commonalities between these two. You get on social media. What happens next?
I contacted her via Facebook and sent a message, and through a couple of other friends, we were able to connect, and they were like jumping up and down for joy, like, oh my gosh, we knew that someone was out there. We had no idea it was you. So they knew the backstory of my biological mother. So then the next day, I got another email from someone who was my first cousin. Didn't recognize the name. I shot her a message and said, you know, I was adopted in 1964, and I'm trying to find information out. Can you help me out? And she emailed me back and said, you know, I just thought this was, you know, like a very unreliable test because you came up as my first cousin, super close. We're talking about the centimorgans, the measurement. And I didn't know who you were, so I thought this was just kind of a garbage test. Little did I know that this was a possibility. Within 2 hours, I pictured like Agnes at the switchboard operator with all the little telephone cords going in and out, and she's contacting everybody, and contacted someone who turned out to be my half-brother.
Wow.
His name is Chris.
Wow.
It was truly incredible. And I still get emotional, which is kind of crazy. It's been, you know, over 3 months.
Not
since
crazy
we've
at all.
Connected. Chris reached out to me and liked my website page on Facebook. And so I said to my husband, I said, should I like friend request him? And he said, yeah, why not? And so I did. And immediately he accepted my friend request. I saw his profile picture and I felt like I was looking at myself. I felt like I was looking into my own eyes,
right.
And that immediate connection that I have never had in my life was there.
Yeah.
It was this primal, innate way that I guess we're programmed to recognize family. And he felt the same way. We're messaging via Facebook, and he immediately sent out for 23andMe and confirmed what we already knew in our heart. And then fast forward a couple weeks later is the Tribeca Film Festival, and I hadn't planned on covering it this year, but given the fact that my two half-brothers were located right outside of Philadelphia, not that far from New York City, I thought, why not? Jumped on a plane, met them in Princeton, New Jersey, and my brother Brian and his wife.
So the half-brother that you contacted through Facebook contacted his
Oh, yeah.
Brothers.
Immediately, I'm sure. And Chris, and, you're probably listening, so yes, right?
and then, so now suddenly you've got three biological half-brothers.
Correct, correct.
Wow.
Yeah, and Brian and his wife, Jeannie, got in the car and drove 10 hours north from North Carolina, and all three of the brothers and I met one Saturday afternoon.
What was that like?
Incredible. I was shaking like a leaf. I was in tears on and off all day. I had gotten up at 3 in the morning to catch a plane out to LaGuardia. So that probably had a little bit to do with things as well. Yeah. And met them at a hotel that had a large lobby, and went downstairs, and they embraced me immediately. And my brother Brian said, "We're not half brothers, we're brothers, or brother or siblings."
Yeah.
So it was incredible.
There are pictures. You wrote about this in Fet Lifestyle magazine, and you have pictures. And to see those pictures, the resemblance is remarkable.
Right.
I can only imagine what it must be from your perspective, looking at people who so much look like you, and that instant bond. I've had so many people tell me that if they go to Europe, they go, you know, someplace and meet family that they never knew that they have, and somehow there is an instant connection. But this is almost even more intimate, even more direct.
It is. And to see, as I said, my brother Chris and I think we could probably be twins just in how we look and how we act and how we think. And there is that unbelievable connection. And my brother Tim, I was able to see my brothers from the second floor lobby of the hotel before I went down and met them. And I'm looking across the lobby that they hadn't seen me at this point. They're waiting at the other elevator bank thinking I'm coming down that way, which is pretty funny. Scared the living daylights out of a man who jumped off the elevator at that point. And I see Tim, and I'm thinking that looks just like my son. Just an incredible resemblance between my son Jonathan and Tim. And as I'm talking with the three guys, I said, "You know, I'm sorry, I'm not processing everything that you're saying. I'm looking at Tim, and I'm seeing my son. I'm looking at Chris, I'm seeing myself. I'm looking at Brian, and I'm just feeling this unbelievable connection with all of them." It was it was incredible.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story. So what's going to happen next now?
Well, it's kind of exciting that, I'm going to back up just a little bit. I was able to meet my brothers, and then, of course, I went to Tribeca, and then they came up to New York and visited with me for a little bit there, which was a lot of fun. Tribeca will never be the same because of this amazing experience. Going back down to New Jersey, then, to meet all of my nieces and nephews. I've got some amazing, incredible...
Their kids.
Yeah, and immediately embracing me, I mean, literally and figuratively. Into the family.
What about your biological parents, though?
My biological mother has passed away. She passed away a year and a half ago, unfortunately, so I won't have a chance to see her. I do have a half-sister who I'm hoping that we can form a relationship with as well. And everyone takes things in their own time. And as I was talking to you off the air, I never want to have a negative impact on anyone's life. And, you know, everyone takes things in their own stride.
Everyone processes this differently.
And it's a huge emotional overload, and everyone does process it differently.
Your biological father?
He, unfortunately, is in a nursing home with dementia.
Okay.
But the guys invited me to meet our biological father, and they're having a family reunion coming up in about a week, so I will go ahead and meet him.
Are you on cloud nine?
And the whole thing has been great. And I think some people worry about, you know, you're replacing your other family, the ones who loved you and raised
right.
you. And in no way is that the case. This is an addition to, you know, where I'm at in my life. Yeah. And I'm
how lucky,
adding.
How lucky to have these people who raised you, who loved you and raised you, and now to have, you know, just to learn more about your biological background.
Oh, absolutely.
How lucky you are.
I'm very lucky. I am on cloud nine with a lot of this jumping up and down.
I'm very late for the news, so I have to go ahead and do that. No, I could listen to this story for an hour. If you want to read more, check out what's the website for Fet Lifestyle Magazine?
You can go ahead and take a look at my Facebook page. Okay. It's probably the easiest way to link up, or go to FetLifestyleMagazine.com. Either way, or look me up on Facebook, Pamela Kammer Powell.
Okay, very good. Thank you for coming in and sharing that wonderful story. It's amazing. Boy, lots of texts about Pamela Powell's conversation with us a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? Have you done 23andMe or Ancestry?
No, I haven't. And you know what? I've given serious thought to it. One of the reasons being is we're very fortunate on my dad's side of the family to have documentation going back almost 200 years.
Wow.
However, on my mom's side of the family, nearly nothing. So that would be, you know, at least attempt to try and get a connection there.
But you know what? Even though you've got the documentation, it's possible. I mean, do you have actual paper, you mean?
Yes.
Documentation?
Well,
that could be accurate then. Because, you know, in my family, we were always told that our family is from the northern portion of Greece.
Okay.
And, you know, my DNA, my 23andMe, it turned out pretty much what I thought it was going to be. But the Greek parts were identified more from southern Greece.
Oh, really?
Not northern, where we had always been told where the family was from.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, but it's not what we thought. But, you know, it's still, you know, pretty much in the same ballpark. As I had said, the one thing that the only surprise that I had on there was that turns out I'm 10% Sicilian.
Sicilian?
Yeah.
That is. You never knew that before.
No clue whatsoever.
Right. Actually, by and large, our relatives are from Northern Europe and Germany. But my great-great-great-grandfather was from a region that is now really Poland.
Huh.
And, you know, the western part of Russia, Ukraine area there. So there's a little mixture of that going on in there back in the family. So 23andMe and other things like that could really, you know, specify.
It would be very interesting. I just did it for fun. That was the main reason I did it.
Yeah, and a lot of my friends have done it for fun, and they've been astounded.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to change my life in any way, but I thought it was really fun. But look at this. I mean, Pamela Powell's story, especially if you're adopted, to learn something about your biological history is amazing. In some ways, it reminds me of what happened with Steve Cochran, where, you know, Steve, who was adopted, you know, found his biological mother was listening to WGN and heard him, and that's how he made the connection with his biological mom and
isn't that something?
His whole biological family that he never knew before that. But here's 23andMe and Ancestry and some of these other stories that are doing this. But a lot of people are texting like crazy on this. I'm a genealogist. This is a great discussion. You should have more stories like this. Mostly people are asking, what is Pamela's Facebook page again? They want to read more about her story and learn more about her story. And so Pamela's Facebook is Pamela Kammer Powell. Pamela K-A-M-M-E-R and Powell, common spelling. Pamela Kammer, K-A-M-M-E-R, Powell. We'll later this afternoon, we'll post the interview, you know, so if you missed it or you think somebody else might be interested in it, you can get some more information about that.
Isn't it also amazing to hear stories about people who discover that they have a biological brother or sister that they never knew?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you could have seen Pamela's face when she was telling the story, I mean, you could hear a little bit that she was getting emotional.
Very emotional, sure.
But if you could see her face, you know, the sheer joy and love that of being able to discover that she's got siblings, biological mm-hmm. siblings after mm-hmm. all these years.
Yeah.
That's very touching.
It is. It certainly is.
Somebody texted in, Siciliano, that explains a lot, Dean. What does that mean? What?
It explains what?
I'm not sure. Do I belong on The Sopranos now? I don't know what that means exactly. Mark, you're on WGN.
Well, thanks for taking me, Dean. Sure. So here's my story.
this past January, I had open heart surgery. I was kind of out of it for a few days. After I woke up from the surgery, I got some news from my sister that somehow through one of the Ancestry websites, her daughter got contacted from somebody who said they were a match. And after talking to her for a little while, we figured out that this was actually my dad's daughter.
Wow.
He had had a daughter before he married my mom that we never knew about.
Wow.
You know, and her story was she was always mad at her biological dad because she never, you know, because he dumped her.
Yeah.
But our family was never like that. My dad was never like that. I kind of believe that he never knew about her.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
And so we find out that sister, who's about 10 years older than me, lives in Colorado, which is a great excuse to go to Colorado.
Yeah, right. So what's been the...
If I need one.
Has there been more follow-up on this at all?
Well, we've been emailing back and forth. We've been, talking and kind of sharing how we grew up and what our current interests are and everything. And, boy, she's got all the traits of my family.
Hmm.
You know, all the things that my family was always into are the things that she is into.
Right.
Boy, it sure seems right.
You know, that's interesting.
I haven't actually met her yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're
yeah, the phone is cutting out a little bit. I've had people tell me, not through any of the DNA services, but people who have gone to, quote, the old country, to places where their families are from, you know, to visit where their grandmother was born or, you know, whatever. And they meet cousins that they never had met before, but, you know, with whom they have biological commonality. And they meet people and they say that hand gestures, facial gestures, the way they stand, the way they walk, things like that are very reminiscent to them of family traits. It's so interesting to me that, that exists, and all these DNA services are just confirming that and bringing it even more to the forefront now, where people are learning about their pasts biologically that we never were able to find out before.
Yeah, and it's really odd. I mean, first of all, this kind of came out of the blue, but then looking back, I think I knew her biological mother, who I'm sure is long gone now, but I think I knew her biological mother at one point.
Yeah.
And just as an acquaintance, you know, as somebody who I knew used to date my dad.
That's so interesting.
So, it's a weird story.
Yeah, well, good luck with all that, Mark. Thank you for sharing that. That's a great story.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a great day today. Hi, Laura. You're on WGN.
Hey, Dean. I have an amazing story. my daughter was born through donor sperm, and many, many years had gone by. We're trying to figure it out and, you know, always wanted to meet this person. We knew... You know, when my ex and I were married, we knew he was an actor and blue eyes. And lo and behold, my daughter, I think it was last year, did an ancestry DNA test, found her biological father. And he was also, and now she found out, and this is, she has 26 half-siblings.
From similar donations?
From the same person. It's been a story on Inside Edition. It's all over the world. He was an actor.
Yeah.
And he had donated sperm for, oh goodness, 5 to 6 years at the same couple places in California. So there could be many, many more siblings out there. But they have been featured on TV. They're all over the world.
Wow.
Talk about story that blows your mind.
Boy, no kidding.
And she met him. They had they met on Father's Day.
Wait, she met him. She met the father.
She met the father. I saw him. I know who he is. And in my wildest dreams, we never thought that we would not only not know who he was, but that she would meet him. And so they've met several of the, well, let's see, they had about 19 to 22 siblings all meet at one place. They still keep in touch with each other.
Wow!
And talk about a blowing your mind story. Is this, I was looking at everybody's story, and I'm going, man, I got a story.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask the actor's name, but is it a name that
No. Well, he's not a famous actor. His father was a very, he wouldn't know him by name, but he was a very prolific character actor in a ton of television shows and movies and everything. And I could tell the story because my daughter's very open about it, but she always wanted to know. And isn't that amazing?
She looks like him.
There was always a part. There was a pic she posted on Facebook, and she looks like him. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
That is extraordinary. I mean, it's a whole different dynamic of somebody who is, given up for adoption for a variety of reasons that happens. This is just somebody who, needed a sperm donation.
Well, he was a struggling actor. And this was a way for him to make extra money. Little did he know. Well, it happened with one child. So he tells a story, he had gotten an email from this one young woman who said, I think you're my biological father. And he froze. He had remembered years before that he had donated, but never did he think anybody would contact him.
Right.
And it took him, I don't know, maybe 24 hours to contact him back. And then he said about once every month he would get a contact. So with all the donations that he made, there may be tons more that we don't even know about.
Amazing. That is an amazing story. Amazing. Laura, thank you so much for sharing that. Wow.
Yeah. They did a thing on Inside Edition. Yeah. They had them all in there. And I tell people the story and their jaws drop.
That's a doozy. I will say that. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. We'll take a quick break and update news next. WGN.
From the first time the doctor placed you in my arms, I knew I'd meet death before I let you meet harm. Although questions arose in my mind, would I be man enough against wrong? Choose right and be standing up. From the hospital that first night, took an hour just to get the car seating right. People driving off fast got me kind of upset. Got you home safe, placed you in your bassinet.
It's a great Father's Day song. Will Smith doing the Just the Two of Us song. Well, the story about him becoming a father. It's a really sweet, lovely song. There's a lot of songs, a lot of stories, a lot of recordings that have me near tears today. There's a video that I think it's Budweiser put out this week about stepfathers. It's the story of three different people talking about the love that their stepfathers provided to them. And I don't know, I saw it on Facebook. Somebody posted it, and I clicked on it.
I'll have to look for this.
And, I had my father passed away about 25 years ago. I had a great father and was lucky enough to also have a great stepfather who passed away shortly after he married my mom. I was like a blubbering whale watching this video.
Well, why not? That's what these are supposed to do.
I guess so. I'm sitting at home.
Touch your heart.
I'm sitting at home watching this video. It's like, oh, this is so beautiful.
Are you all right? Yeah, I'm fine.
Nobody was home, thank goodness.
Watching a little Facebook, all.
It's somebody posted a picture of their feet on Facebook, that's all.
The toenails are so cute.
If you have a stepfather, I mean, today we should also, remember stepfathers, and all the variations of fatherhood. But if you watch this video and you're not turned into a puddle of tears, I will be amazed.
This is the Budweiser one?
Yes.
I'll have to find this.
I saw it on, do you have it, Ariel? Is that what you're, good. It's been a long time since I've actually cried on the air. Go ahead.
My wonderful stepdad, Randy. It feels like he's been around forever.
This is my lovely stepdad of 28 years now. I should say just dad at this point.
With my actual dad. So when I met Mark, I was like, oh, this is what a dad is.
Growing up, it was just my mom and I. I had this fantasy that my parents are going to get back together. When my mom met Randy, I just remember my mom would try to get us to act like father and daughter. I was not having it. I don't need this other person trying to come in and be my dad.
Your pole's all backwards.
Well, see?
You gotta see the video to fully appreciate this. Ariel, what's the, if people want to listen to this whole thing, what's the website where people can find this?
It's at the Budweiser YouTube page. I just typed in Budweiser Stepdad on YouTube.
All right. Budweiser YouTube page. Yeah, I had to get out of this while I still had composure. Especially that part of, I didn't want any part of my stepdad. I already have a dad. That was me as a teenager. I was so mean to my stepfather about, because he was trying to be nice to me. And thank God I had a chance to apologize to him before he passed away and let him know how much he meant to me through the years. All right.
Are you all right in there?
I am a hairpin turn away from. Let's do a far-flung forecaster. Do you have anything funny that can happen right now?
Anything funny that could happen?
Yeah, funny like a clown? You got something funny for me here? Actually, I do have something funny like a clown. Jim Gaffigan, actually. And we'll hear from him next, WGN. 1218, this is Dean Richards. Sunday morning, WGN. White Sox baseball coming up. Joe Bryant will have White Sox pregame coming up. After the 12:30 news, wanted to try to squeeze in some of our A-list interviews here before we wrap things up early today, including last night in Chicago, where Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man, honored his friend Jon Favreau with Gene Siskel Film Center's Renaissance Award, sort of a career achievement award. I remember very clearly, just prior to 2008, before the first Iron Man movie came out, and everybody was talking about Robert Downey Jr. Taking on this role, because as you will remember, Downey had some trouble with the law and some trouble with substance abuse through the years. He was a very high risk. Jon Favreau went to the film studios and assured them that it would be okay. Begged them to let him get the actor that he wanted for that role, Robert Downey. Downey has completely turned his life around. And in my opinion, it was Jon Favreau really that saved his life, both personally and professionally. Last night, Downey was able to thank him on stage. I talked with them both last night on the red carpet.
You know, I remember talking with both of you before Iron Man came out about what a pivotal time it was in your life and what you went through because you had such faith in Robert for that role.
Now look like a genius. Yeah. Look at that, what, 10, 11 years later? Yeah, so now it's, yeah, I think the Iron Man arc is complete and he's done us all proud, huh?
Yeah. What was it that you saw, though, that, I mean, like, you really insisted that you needed him?
I ask myself that every day.
I don't know what it is.
You know, funny, in success, everyone starts rewriting their history. Let's be honest here. I did him a solid. Now,
it's true.
But the other funny thing is, and the reason I'm so glad to be here doing this Gene Siskel thing for the Film Center and giving him the Renaissance Award is because this is kind of like closing a circle for us. So this is my Lion King moment with him, where I get to come back to my gal's hometown.
And where I started.
Where he started. Okay, right. Tonight's going to be memory lane.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
What was it that John has contributed to you? I mean, this award that he's getting here tonight is, for his body of work, is obvious. Yeah. To you.
I'm all over his body of work. Why do you think I'm here?
Yeah.
No, he is the single central empowerment figure in my life creatively.
Thank you.
Male.
And this is my...
And then the missus.
And of course the wives.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we're
also...
We click and we enjoy each other's work more, I think. I'm the president of the Robert Downey Fan Club. I love his work when we work together. I love his work even more when we don't, because I appreciate it more from a distance. But I'm really happy he came here to do this tonight. It's a special night to be in Chicago with us, and it's even more special that a guy like this who's got a very busy life makes the time to come out here and be part of this.
It's great to see you,
gentlemen. Yeah.
So there is Robert Downey Jr. and Jon Favreau a little bit on the red carpet last night at the Four Seasons Hotel. I'll have more I'll show it to you, but have more on the WGN TV morning news tomorrow morning. I got to tell you a little something. When the movie Jungle Book came out that Jon Favreau directed, we had a fantastic interview. Many, many times that I've interviewed Jon Favreau, but we had a wonderful interview, and I was getting ready to leave. He goes, wait a minute, I want to give you something. And Favreau sends his assistant out to get it's a commemorative coin that Jon Favreau has made when he makes a movie that he gives out to his actors and to his key technical people on the movie as a souvenir of making that movie. And he gave me one of those commemorative coins for Jungle Book. It's the logo of Jungle Book on one side. On the back, it says director. And he said, I want you to have that. We've had so many nice interviews, which I so appreciated. Last night on the red carpet, I brought the Jungle Book commemorative coin with me. And I showed John. I said, I just want you to know that I've got this on my desk every day. I see it every single day. And it just reminds me of what a nice relationship that we've had with these interviews. And he goes, oh, well, wait a minute. He reaches in his pocket, and he has another commemorative coin for his movie The Lion King, which isn't even out yet. And he hands me the coin. He goes, I want you to have this. You're one of the first to have this. So last night I got another commemorative coin from Favreau as well. He is just one of the nicest guys that there is. Part of the evening last night at the Four Seasons was John talking about his career, and we've got a little of that for you now.
I started off in Chicago. That scene just follows improv rules, which is heighten and transform. What's the game in the scene? Heighten that game until it transforms into something else. So it just made it more and more ridiculous, like you would do if you were improvising it on stage, and then it turned into him breaking up and living a whole relationship without ever talking to somebody. And then the transformation is that she picks up the phone and it moves you to the next plot point. So honestly, I'm not just saying it because I'm in Chicago, but I chose to move here from New York when I wanted to start pursuing a career in acting. And I had passed through town going cross country. I saw a set over at Second City. I saw the list of names on the wall, all my heroes. I didn't realize that there was one place they all came from. You know, it all comes back from that. And I have to say that a lot of it is because Chicago serves as a real incubator for creativity, because you have an incredibly supportive arts community that takes a lot of pride and the people who come from here. And so if you have a show that gets decent reviews, that show could run as long as you want to run it. You'll sell that theater out because people will come check it out. And it's a small enough town that there's enough overlap between... I spent the whole day at the Art Institute, and that's... Yes, this is part of this, too. And that overlapped with the Goodman, and that overlapped with Second City, and overlapped with Steppenwolf. And so you had this really vibrant community. You could live here. You could afford to live here with a job that you were doing, you know, waiting tables or whatever, bartending like I was doing. And it also gave you the skill set, and you got to fail a lot. And we don't really...
That's right.
We don't give people permission to fail right now who are coming up.
So there's Jon Favreau from last night at the Renaissance Award Gala that was at the Four Seasons Hotel. Robert Downey Jr. interviewed Favreau, talking about his career, and these guys are old, very close and personal friends. We'll have much more on it tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News. One more quick break, and we'll get ready for White Sox pregame. Next, WGN is going to wind it up for us today. I hope you all have a wonderful Father's Day, whatever it is you're celebrating today with your father, memories of dads that may have passed. Wish you all the very, very best for this special day. We'll see you tomorrow morning on the Steve Cochran Show. More on entertainment tomorrow and every weekday morning between 8 and 8:30 in the morning. Of course, on the WGN-TV Morning News as well. Tomorrow morning, again, we'll show you the interviews with Robert Downey Jr. and Jon Favreau. Also, Jim Gaffigan. We were going to get to the full interview today. We'll put that up on the web We ran out of time for that today, but you'll enjoy that interview, and I'll show you some of that tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News as well. We've got White Sox pregame coming up next. The White Sox and the Yankees doing battle again today. Andy Mazur is filling in for Ed Farmer today, so you'll get your Andy Mazur fix coming up in just a little while. We're also going to check our WGN news before we get to all of that. And into the newsroom we go. Here is Dave Schwann.
An apology from Aqua, Illinois. They are apologizing to customers in the University Park, Monique Township, and Green Garden areas for a do not consume water advisory. This was issued because of elevated lead levels in the tap water. Bottled water is being supplied until the